This is Pure Decking for Thursday, January something. What the hell is today? 4th. January 4th. Whatever year Madman tells me it is, I don't really know anymore. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, pointing out how rigged the game is, and removing the 7 key from your keyboard so you type the year correctly at least once today. Or this week. I'm Morbs. And tonight I have Suave. Suave, what are we drinking?
Absolutely nothing tonight.
Huh. That's...
recovering from the holidays.
Nihilism, got it. Madman, what are we drinking?
I'm drinking a monkey shoulder, also to recover from the holidays.
I'm actually currently drinking balls. Anybody remember that?
Yes. I had heart palpitations drinking balls once, mainly because I broke up like 3 or 4 yellow jackets in it and mixed it up a bit. And I drank it, and then my heart didn't like me, or I got a little dizzy. But I played D&D for 72 hours. It worked out in the end. I didn't die. That fell into the airship, flying type, didn't know there was any other type, and the DM didn't tell me whether or not I could roll damage for the magic missile, which I know hit his ass, because magic missile hits every fucking body.
You sound bitter. Are we bitter?
Slightly, but he was kind of drifting in and out of consciousness at that time, and his then wife told us we had to stop playing because we were becoming zombies.
So, yeah, they started, I don't know if they ever stopped making it, but you can order cases of that again, and so I may have ordered an unhealthy amount of the energy drink, probably out of nostalgia, because that was the drink we always drank at early LAN parties. You know, screw this Red Bull and Monster bullshit, go back to the classics, Jolt, balls.
Oh yeah, I remember.
Coffee.
Jolt was the original energy drink.
Yeah, they were supposed to be bringing that back, but I haven't been able to find it.
Oh.
Like, I saw a single can on Amazon going for $30. I'm like,
I think Dollar General's carrying that.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, I've checked a couple of them around here, and they don't have it. The guys working there are looking at me funny when I ask for it. Like, you're looking for what? So, I don't know. But, yeah, that, and then I've got, of course, a Devil's Cut Chaser. So, there's unfortunately really only one major story that we're going to be talking about tonight. And
I know which
it's
that
like
story is.
Half the show links are about, Intel's been fucking us over for 10 years. Memory separation.
20 so, years.
Huh?
20 years, man.
Did they up it to 20? Last I heard it was the last 10.
1995.
So it's the designs going all the way... damn, it's all the way back to the Pentium 2?
That's what I was reading. Whew. Maybe not for the Spectre, but I was
Meltdown.
Reading about the Meltdown.
So, let's yeah, Psychor didn't like my opinion on net neutrality. I don't blame him. He's in the chat room saying, well, we'll talk about it. Let's hear it. It's like, I want to hear this more than what you said about neutrality. I'm just trying to think out of the box a little bit on it, that's all. Because, I mean, it was like major corporations, Comcast and, you know, Verizon think net neutrality is bad. Major corporations, Alphabet and Facebook think net neutrality is good. And the entire internet, whose opinions are mostly shaped by Google and Facebook, think net neutrality is good. Wait a minute. It's like, at least think about it a little bit, guys. So, I don't know. But, so, there's a, of course, a named website that somebody's already put up for this for the Meltdown attack, Meltdown Inspector. So let's start with that. And whereas I've done some reading on this stuff for work, I haven't really fully sat down and examined all of it. So I'm going to be kind of reading this along with everybody else. So Meltdown Inspector exploit critical vulnerabilities in modern processors. These hardware bugs allow programs to steal data, which is currently processed on the computer. While programs are typically not permitted to read data from other programs. Oh, you sweet summer child. You never had to deal with the joys that were DOS and Windows 95 and Windows 98 that did not have protected memory modes. When drivers would crash each other because they were trying to use the same fucking hard-coded RAM.
Awesome.
Yeah, don't worry, Cycross. We've got the we've got some of the stock stories.
I like the Song of Ice and Fire reference there.
Let's see. Running programs. This might include your passwords stored in a password manager or browser, or your personal photos or emails. Wow, way to play this up, guys. Meltdown Inspector work on personal computers, mobile devices, and in the cloud. I need my dramatic squirrel. There it is. Instant messages, email, whether work on the cloud. Depending on the cloud provider's infrastructure, it might be possible to steal data from other customers. My understanding is both Amazon and Azure did rolling restarts of their entire infrastructure to get this shit patched.
Oh, yeah.
Yet you are right, Cycros. It says, yet again, the guy with the C64 is secure on the internet.
Well, he's not wrong.
So, yeah, Meltdown, which is the one that's been out for a couple of days and the one that I know the most about, is on the Intel-only bug, as far as I know. Meltdown breaks the most fundamental isolation between user applications and the operating system. This attack allows programs to access the memory and thus the secrets of other programs and the operating system. If your computer is a vulnerable processor and runs an unpatched operating system, it is not safe to work with sensitive information without the chance of leaking the information. This applies to both personal computers as well as cloud infrastructure, and there are software patches. All of the major operating systems have put out patches for this. Now, they're fairly recent, and what we haven't talked about yet is the performance hit of these Meltdown patches, which I can explain that a little bit. And then you have Spectre. Spectre breaks the isolation between different applications. It allows an attacker to trick error-free programs, which follow best practices, into leaking their secrets. In fact, the safety checks of said best practices actually increase the attack surface and may make applications more susceptible to Spectre. Spectre is harder to exploit than Meltdown, but it is also harder to mitigate. However, it is possible to prevent specific known exploits based on Spectre through software patches. So Meltdown was originally reported by the Google, or both of these were found by Google. So this whole page is probably hosted by Google. And it's been independently reported by multiple people. So these processor flaws have been known.
I think it was June of last year.
Yeah, because they reported it so that Intel could fix it. And Intel has said, I think any chips they've manufactured in the last 6 months are fixed. But that's mostly not everybody.
Yeah.
That's almost nobody has processors manufactured in the last 6 months. I just rebuilt my main rig, and I don't have a processor that was manufactured in the last 6 months. I'm guaranteeing that processor's been on the shelf for a year before I bought it.
They're probably going to have some trouble selling older, like any older processors now. Like really,
well, certainly for any secured applications.
Yeah.
So there are patches for Meltdown for Linux, Windows, OS X, and it is known to harden software against future exploits of Spectre. This FAQ is kind of useless. They've got a video showing it working, so they've proven that Meltdown works. And they've got a logo on this main page. So yeah, here's your named exploit page so that everybody can get into a nice tizzy and panic over it.
So they say it will harden your system against it. So it's not going to like immunize or anything like that.
You can't.
The way they word it, it just kind of sounds like it's
You cannot prevent.
We'll fix it kind of for now a little bit.
Well, it's so what you're doing is you're I guess if I could explain it a little bit. So the meltdown flaw is where for performance enhancement reasons, they did not do very strong separation of the memory between ring zero and the higher rings, you know, ring one, ring two, ring three of the processor. So generally the kernel of your operating system, and that's not just a Linux thing, it's all operating systems have a kernel. It's just a name of the component. The kernel translates I'm super simplifying here, so nobody crucify me for missing something. The kernel translates system calls that most of them originate in what's called user land. That's where your programs actually run, your desktop, Firefox, your email program, web browser, whatever, right? So the system calls, and your typical system calls are going to be retrieve a file from the hard drive, get a file from the network, get a connection from the network, make the lights on your LED fans blink. I don't know. There's a lot. And pretty much anything where your program's interacting with anything outside of itself is going to be a system call.
Right.
So the kernel manages these system calls between the user land programs and the hardware, and actually translates. So the kernel's what's translating, you know, the movement of your mouse to the instruction sets that your processor will understand to actually move the numbers around in memory to tell it where the cursor is, right?
Right.
And so when I mentioned these rings earlier, these are kind of like a run level or an isolation level. Ring zero on the processor can see everything. So your kernel can manage everything. This is why the kernel can kill other programs. The user land rings, the user land areas, generally cannot. They're usually isolated from each other. And this bug means that the hardware isolation of memory that most modern operating systems rely on, all of modern operating systems rely on, so that the memory calls are performant, doesn't actually work. There are ways around it in the hardware.
Gotcha.
So you can, if you know the right system calls to make, and that web page I linked has a video of somebody doing it, you can retrieve memory from areas outside, or areas that you should be prevented from retrieving that memory from,
right,
inside of user land. So it's user land is being allowed to go out and reach memory as though it was ring zero, which means it can reach pretty much anything in memory.
Right.
And that's bad.
Yep.
Because it means that any assumption that the programs could not read memory outside of themselves is basically gone.
Right.
So these patches, what they're actually doing is they're adding in a software layer to where the operating system actually has to manage the memory isolation again.
Okay.
So when it says harden, what they're saying is the operating system's trying to manage it, but if there's a flaw in the operating system or you somehow get around the software implementation, you can still access the hardware vulnerability.
Gotcha.
Because there actually needs to be a change of the circuitry in your chip to fix it. This isn't even something they can fix with a microcode patch.
Right.
So, and it's been in the basic design for a decade.
I wonder how many people knew about that for a decade.
I would imagine more than you would expect.
Yep.
Because it's only been recently that people have been poking at hardware flaws in the processors. You know, that's like they found Minix embedded in all Intel systems as well. So it's only been recently people have really been poking at it. But I'd be willing to bet your alphabet soup agencies and your really highly skilled guys probably knew about it, probably found a way out of about it, and either just assumed it was supposed to be that way or would take advantage of it and not tell anybody. But Google found it and finally reported it. So AMD said they're not vulnerable to Meltdown, but they're saying they're vulnerable to. Somebody's saying they're vulnerable to Spectral, but Linux, and amusingly enough, disabled the Meltdown patches for AMD processors, saying AMD is fairly confident that they're not vulnerable to this, so we're not going to slow them down. So,
well, as long as that's true, good.
Yep, yep. So I've got the statement for AMD's website here. Let me throw this link in the IRC. There we go. Deanna, I'm going to say Tor users. Yes, Cycross, it absolutely could. So what this – so I let me take a step back before I do the AMD stuff. This what these vulnerabilities actually translate to are what's called privilege escalation. If you have code running on a system, you could potentially exploit this flaw and see code and see memory from other parts of the system. And visiting web pages are running things like JavaScript and that new compiled JavaScript, which I haven't looked into very much yet, but it's like WebASM, I think is what it's called. It's supposed to be compiled performant code for web browsing or for web applications. So that's running code, so that's probably a big, huge flaw. And because the operating system is now managing this memory separation, depending on what kind of syscalls your system's making, you could see some pretty significant performance impacts. Most of the articles I've seen are saying it's up to 30% for some of the stuff that's heavily syscall related, things like servers and virtualization. And
like that 30% is basically the absolute maximum under testing.
Yeah, it's the worst
conditions.
Case scenario.
Like, I can't remember the name of the benchmark that they did, but it was basically all like system calls pretty much. From what I understand, like, your average computer user isn't really even going to notice it. Because, like, and really, when you think about it, like, when have you ever, like, really pegged your CPU doing anything?
Video render.
But, like, I'd say, like, when I, you know, your average user, I doubt would have, would really notice it.
Server farms will, and that's the that concerns me.
Oh, yeah.
Is because like, you're going to have groups at work that are like, you mean I'd have to buy 30% more computers to get the same level of performance? Well, fuck it. I'm not applying that patch. We can't afford it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, like I said, Amazon, excuse me, and Azure had to do rolling restarts to get this thing applied.
Right.
And... you know, if their things are now 30% less performant, well, maybe not 30, but if these things are now a significant amount less performant, which, you know,
I bet
quarter,
you in real world conditions it's going to be single digits.
I hope so. God, I hope so.
Oh, cloud computing is going to go to shit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to get a lot more expensive. That's the worry. So,
you know, considering that Google has known about it for like half a year and haven't been buying up. Large amounts of
no. Google's gone to their own ARM-based platform a long time ago.
Oh, did they? Yeah, but ARM CPUs are also affected.
Not nearly as badly.
Oh, okay.
But I think they're ARM-based. I met some Google engineers and they were talking about their infrastructure. One, they were bragging that they run more infrastructure than the internet now, which I believe.
Yeah.
But yeah, they do all custom hardware. They don't use off the shelf Intel PC or Intel based PC server farm anymore.
Oh, okay.
They manufacture their own hardware, and it's all fairly custom stuff. So I imagine that they took care of this in their own fairly quickly. Right. But it's Spectre is the one that everybody's vulnerable to. Cycross, yeah, he's saying ARM's afflicted too. Yeah. It's like, yeah, Meltdown is just Intel. Spectre is everybody. So,
and I'd like to know what they mean when they say, "Oh, it's not as easy to exploit."
Well, it probably means that it's probably more hoops to jump through to get at the memory.
Right.
You probably have to go through multiple layers of syscall and stuff like that to make it work.
Yeah, but like, how long is it going to take somebody to like whip together a tool that handles most of it?
Oh, as soon as the details are released, I give it about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So, let's give the AMD article here a look. So, let's see. Cracking encryption while getting a blowjob. What? Oh, swordfish.
Swordfish yep. reference.
Yeah. Let's see. There's
Ultimate
been recent press.
Hacking movie.
There's been recent press coverage regarding a potential security issue with modern microprocessors. Speculative, blah, 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 blah. AMD's response. So, yeah. So, variant two differences mean a near zero. So, yeah, AMD is saying they have near zero risk to this. But that's not Spectre. That's just Meltdown. Or did I mix them up? Fuck.
Yeah, Meltdown is the Intel one.
Okay, yeah, thank you. So, yeah, they're not vulnerable to Spectre, but everybody is vulnerable to this other one because it's an architecture design flaw.
They're not vulnerable to Meltdown, but everyone's vulnerable to Spectre.
Yeah, there it is. Thank you. So, the Register has a funny article because they went through Intel's statement and translated it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm going to read this out, but I'll throw out the link because it's pretty funny. Basically, they went through the Intel statement and were like, this means, you know, the chip is working as designed. This means everybody has a problem. You know, this means don't sue us. Don't make us recall chips.
Oh, God, could you imagine?
Oh, the price of chips would go through the roof.
Well, like everybody's been saying, AMD's price went up 10, or stock price went up 10% overnight.
Oh yeah, did Intel go down like 8% over the last couple of days?
It did. It went down quite a bit. But here's the really, really funny part. Let me just copy this link into the IRC here. Bob, I don't see you in the IRC, so let's just read out this headline. Intel was aware of the chip vulnerability when its CEO sold off $24 million in company stock. Whoops.
I was reading about that, and he basically kept the absolute minimum he was required to keep at his position. He sold everything else. Like, I think he had to keep 250,000 shares, and he sold everything but 250,000 shares.
Intel CEO Brian Krannich sold off $24 million worth of stock and options in the company in late November. The stock sale came after Google had informed Intel of a significant vulnerability in the chips, a flaw that only became public this week. Intel says the stock sale was unrelated to the vulnerability and came as part of a planned divestiture program. But Krannich put that stock sale plan in place in October, several months after Intel was informed of the vulnerability. Yeah. The vulnerability, which affects processors from... Okay, so this is a different vulnerability. They're talking about Spectre. Allow malicious actors to steal passwords and other data. Became public this week. The disclosures of processor makers and operating system vendors, including Intel and Microsoft, scrambling to get on top of the story and patch their products. Intel was aware of the problem before Krannich sold off a big chunk of his holdings. Raised eyebrows when it was disclosed because it left Krannich with just the minimum the company... Yeah, 250,000 shares of Intel, the minimum the company requires him to hold under his employment agreement. So... Intel says the spell was pre-planned, but the plan was put in place months after the chipmaker learned of the vulnerability.
It's not looking good there, buddy.
No, it's not. It's gone down quite a bit.
I'm saying for that guy. That's
called insider trading
laws,
and
yeah.
He's gonna have a bad time. But yeah. So this, it gets a little weird, right? Because there's the two different vulnerabilities.
And they're so similar.
Yeah. Let's see. There are patches for Meltdown for Linux. Where's Spectre? So Spectre has a Linux patch, but nobody else has patched it yet. Almost every system is affected by Spectre, desktops, laptops, cloud servers, as well as smartphones. More specifically, all modern processors capable of keeping many instructions in flight are particularly vulnerable. They have verified Spectre on Intel, AMD, and ARM. Cloud providers that use Intel CPUs and Zen PV as virtualization without having patches applied. Cloud providers without real hardware virtualization run Intel on containers such as Docker, LXC, or OpenVZ are affected. So if you're running inside of a VM, you are not affected. So, what this means, if you're running any modern operating system, it's going to include the patch, right? So, unless you're specifically not doing the patch for performance reasons and you're running everything in VMs, your VMs are not vulnerable to this unless you're using Xen para virtualization. Or if you're only doing Docker containers and that kind of thing. If you're using KVM, which I believe Amazon is in the process of switching over to because they were using Xen. Pretty sure Microsoft is using their own for Azure. They're using the Hyper-V, I think is what it's called on Windows. And but I'm wondering when with VMware and Hyper-V is probably already patched if it's in the OS. I wonder if VMware is going to put out a patch for this in VM kernel, because that to me is going to be interesting to see what they do about the performance. Because I imagine VMware is going to take a pretty good hit. So there's a lot of syscalls in that. So, yeah, here we go. What's the difference between Meltdown and Spectre? Meltdown breaks the mechanism that keeps applications from accessing arbitrary system memory. Consequently, applications can access system memory. Spectre tricks other applications into accessing arbitrary locations in memory. Both attacks use side channels to obtain information about the memory location. And then they've got papers for both of them on the main site. So let's look at Spectre's paper. I haven't read into this much. Oh, this is a this is a freaking white paper. This is not something I'm going to read on the air because I'm going to have to actually digest this. But so both of these vulnerabilities are ultimately privilege escalation vulnerabilities. The interesting thing will be to see if they can start doing VM breaks with it. If they can break out of virtualization containers. I imagine not, because the low-level system calls are going to get intercepted by the VM, and they probably either won't be allowed or they'll be filtered because there'll be kind of these odd things that they're trying to get at the side channel for the memory. But I don't know. It depends on how the virtualization's handled. So you'd actually have to test it on VMs. But since I don't think the test code's been released yet. If it has, I haven't seen it yet. I don't think that anybody's actually sat down and tested what's vulnerable. We're kind of taking Google's word for it at the moment. But so these are ultimately privilege escalation attacks. You can't just, you know, pick a random computer off the internet and take it over with one of these. However, if you can get a code to run on a computer, which could involve simply visiting a website, more likely, it would be something like getting somebody to download and run a file, whether it's an executable or script. But there's plenty of crap that already involves that. How do you think crypto ransomware spreads?
Yeah.
Or, well, any botnet or virus. So, or crypto miners. That's a new one. We'll switch into that in here in a minute. But pretty much this means that privilege escalation and isolation between programs is not to be trusted right now. So until everything's verified, is patched, and taken care of, you've just got to be really careful and watch what processors are running on your machines. I think if you want to build a truly hardened environment, you're going to have to do application whitelisting.
Right. So with Spectre, is that just a software glitch, or is it also hard-coded?
It's hard-coded. It's a problem. Both of these are problems with the hardware.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wish there was more information on this Spectre, man, because I just built an AMD system. It's like, damn it, of course. So I don't have to. I just built an AMD system, so I don't care about the Intel one. Except I've got a couple of got stacks of Intel machines all over the place. So I mean, I still care. Don't get me wrong. I just get to make the joke about my new rig being AMD, but since the other memory flaw is still there, that doesn't mean that much. So until all these things get patched up, it's just you got to be careful about trusting what code that runs. And if you are doing anything with untrusted code, you probably want to use a burner machine. And what I mean by a burner machine is you probably want to set up an extra machine.
Raspberry Pi or something. That'll handle most cases.
Yeah, sure. And you know, make sure there's nothing you care about actually on it, so that if something does get in it, it can't get at anything that's real.
Yeah.
Like
sandboxing is no longer really is that real?
No, it's not. It's anymore? It is not sufficient with these flaws.
Yeah.
Because that's the problem, is that the sandboxing and the hardware has failed.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, fun stuff. Also, you know, like they said in the article, you know, those password managers now may not be the best idea. You might be more secure just keeping your passwords in a notebook sitting next to your monitor.
So, a note on that. If you treat your passwords like you treat your social security number, oh, that's a bad example. If you treat your passwords like how you should treat your social security number, or like say how you should treat your credit card numbers, as in you keep them secret, you put them in your wallet, you only get them out when you need them, you put them away when you're done, writing them down is probably fine.
Oh yeah.
You're
not needing to like protect your passwords, or at least most people don't, from like a family member who might come into the house or something like that. Or you know, like a significant other. It's like the random stranger on the internet.
Well, okay, or if you work in an office.
Yeah.
You know, so the whole passwords under the keyboard, passwords anywhere in the desk. God forbid the post-it notes stuck to the side of the monitor. I still see that every once in a while. It drives me up the fucking wall. You know, that kind of stuff, no. If you need a notebook for all your passwords, you know, like I said, if you treat it, you know, like a teenage girl treats their diary, you know, locked up and hidden somewhere, then, you know, that can be okay. But if you're just going to leave it sitting out on your desk or easy to find, or, you know, passwords.xls on your desktop, yeah, that's not good. Anyways, let's move on to our news articles here. But in the meantime, understand that it is a privilege escalation and application sandbox break. So if untrusted code gets on the computer, it's easier for it to maneuver around, and you pretty much have to assume that if untrusted code got on the computer is not trustworthy, period. And you have to operate like that until all this stuff gets patched up.
Right.
So next article is from Ars Technica and is comical. Paste. There it goes. Crypto mining Android malware is so aggressive it's physically harming phones. Killing the battery.
I remember hearing like rumors about viruses back in the early days that would like cook CPUs or like wreck CD drives or hard drives by overspinning them and stuff like that.
I never saw one cook a CPU, but I was aware of a virus in the early days.
Yeah.
That would screw up EGC monitors, because on certain machines the scan lines were actually controlled by software.
Okay.
And so you could set a refresh rate too high, and the video hardware wouldn't stop you from trying it. You know, today if you go in and say my monitor can do 500 megahertz, you know, 500 hertz refresh rate, you know, both the LCD controller or the CRT controller, if you're still on an old school CRT for, you know, color reasons or something, and the video card are going to be like, yeah, no, go away. But on some of these older school machines where you could actually control that, I think it was EGC, maybe it was CGA. Anyways, one of those, you could actually, you know, the software could go in and set absurd refresh rates. And whereas it might not destroy the monitor, it could damage it.
Right.
Or, you know, it could set... the one I always remember was the one that could screw up the monitor, and the one that would cause the hard drive to thrash the head trying to get it to screw up and scratch the disk. It wasn't that the virus itself was capable of, saying, you know, moving the head into a position where it would damage the disk.
Right.
It was just, you know, running the disk at such a rate that it was trying to get it to break itself.
Anyways, we're getting sidetracked here, but yeah, like it's I haven't seen anything like that in a long time. So it's kind of interesting to see a
newly discovered piece of Android malware carries out literally a litany of malicious activities, including showing almost unending series of ads, participating in distributed denial-of-service attacks, sending text messages to any number, and silently subscribing to paid services. Its biggest offense, a surreptitious cryptocurrency miner that's so aggressive it can physically damage an infected phone. Trojan.androidos.lopi, or LOAPI, is hidden inside applications distributed through third-party markets, browser ads, and SMS-based spam. Researchers from antivirus provider Kaspersky Lab, can we trust them? Oh no. Have dubbed it a jack-of-all-trades to emphasize the breadth of nefarious things it can do. Most notably, LOAPI apps contain a module that mines Monero, a newer type of digital currency that's less resource-intensive than Bitcoin and most of the cryptocurrencies. That's also the same one that has a JavaScript miner. Also, Monero has some kind of built-in money laundering. Just flat out call it what it is. It's built-in money. It tries to make it difficult to track who's been doing what transactions anonymity. So, fungibility. Thank you, Psychros. He put the nicer word on it. it's built-in money laundering. Let's just call it what it is, which is why the criminals like it. The module allows the malware creators to generate new coins by leeching the electricity and hardware of infected phone owners. But the lower demands of Monero mining by no means stop LOAPI from straining infected phones, because researchers tested LOAPI in a lab setting. After 2 days, the mining caused the battery in the phone to bulge so badly it deformed the cover.
Wow.
And they've got pictures. So,
well, yeah, I guess you run a phone flat out 24/7. That's going to cause all kinds of problems.
Yeah, Psychros is right. It's also because you can mine it with basically anything since it's CPU mining.
Right.
Over the past few months, a surge of sites and apps have been caught draining people's CPUs and electricity as they run resource-intensive cryptocurrency mining code. In a handful of cases, the apps or sites disclose what's happening, throttling down the mining and ask users to participate as a form of payment. So the idea is to use the cryptocurrency mining instead of ads. In the vast majority of cases, however, the mining is only discovered when the user opens monitors that track all processes or apps running on a device. On Tuesday, officials at AV provider Sophos formally labeled all cryptocurrency mining without user consent as parasitic. Parasitic's malware. That's not bad.
Yeah.
LOAPI is a nuisance and otherwise is go beyond covert coin mining. It sends an unending barrage of prompts for users to assign an admin. It does the whole just sits there and asks for admin over and over and over again until you finally hit yes to make it go away.
Have you changed your mind yet? How about now? How about now? How about now?
There was a freeware MMO we tried that let people do that. Just, spam you with group invites. It was because you got XP from the group whether you did anything or not. And so people did that. They had scripts because their characters would just sit in town and spam any character out there with group invites to the point that, you couldn't get rid of them. Your screen would get covered in them. So I don't remember what MMO that was. It was when we were trying a bunch of different ones. Swamp, do you remember?
Oh, I can't remember that.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. Didn't leave enough of an impact.
I just remember that really annoying me, which is one of the reasons we didn't stick with that MMO. It can subscribe phone to costly premium services and send covert codes and SMS to confirm the request. It allows attackers to use infected phones as foot soldiers in DDoS attacks. Constant stream of ads, and there are no indicators LOAPI apps have ever been available through Google Play. It's just basically running the phone flat out constantly, which not only causes it to heat up. Anybody who's ever played a high end, picked up on a high end Android phone, and blasted some app that can really, really heat it up.
Yep.
They know what that's like. So I assume what's happening there is they're overdraining the battery and just heating it up hot from the CPU just sitting there mining Monero all day long.
Yeah.
I gotta wonder, what kind of return are you getting on a single cell phone mining Monero? I know they're doing it at scale, but I'm just wondering, what does the math on that look like? Do you need 1,000 cell phones for it to be profitable? I mean,
yeah. Your Morp's writing the code in his mind right now.
No. We don't write code in my mind. We do diagrams. Anyways,
borrow other charts. People's code. It's code. It's apparently already been written.
Fair point. Next one up, is just comical. It's from Bleeping Computer, and this one's a little bit older. It's actually from December. For the second year in a row, 123456 remained the top password among millions of clear text passwords exposed online, thanks to data breach incidents at various providers. called Pseudocode Psychros. You should be familiar with it. Yeah. Well, having 123456 as your password is quite bad. The other terms found on the top 100 worst passwords of 2017 are just as distressing and regretful. Some of them include extensive collection of football of sports terms: football, baseball, soccer, hockey, Lakers, Jordan 23, golf, Rangers, Yankees, car brands. Of course, you got Mercedes, Corvette, Ferrari, Harley. That's a motorcycle, buddy. And various expressions: I love you, let me in, whatever, blah blah. By far, the list was dominated with names: Robert, Matthew, Jordan, Daniel, Andrew, Andrea, Joshua, George, Nicole, Hunter, Chelsea, Phoenix, Amanda, Ashley, Jessica, Jennifer, Michelle, William, Maggie, Charlie, and Martin showing up on the list. So in other words, take this top 100 lists, throw all of these passwords at any website, and you're probably going to get in, because people are dumb. Multi-factor, people. For God's sakes, multi-factor. It's not even hard anymore.
Password is still up there. It's number 2.
So here's the actual top 25. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Password. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. QWERTY. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1 through 9. Let me in. 1 through 7. Football. I love you. Admin. Welcome. Good God. Welcome is still a password. Is guest on there? I bet guest is on there too. I don't see guest. That's
Let me in's new. It didn't even make the list last year. It's coming in strong.
I've seen that as the default password in a lot of stuff before, though. Monkey is new. Login. Hombre. Monkey. Login. ABC 123. Star Wars is new. 123123. Dragon password. Master. Hello. Freedom. Whatever. Cusack. WS. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's going down the keyboard instead of across. Ooh. Trust no one at number 25. Oh, for God's sakes, people. How to check if an update Windows systems for Meltdown Inspector CPU flow. Oh, they got the checks out? Have they got the checks out? There's some PowerShell script that claims to be a check. When was this published? Probably not that long ago. This was published a couple of hours ago, so that's why I didn't see it when I was doing my initial notes. Check the status of oh, gotcha. Okay, this isn't actually testing the flaw. This is just looking for the Windows patches. I wanted to actually test the flaw so I could throw it at VMs and shit. Next article up is from Ars Technica. These experts have figured out why so many bogus patents get approved.
Oh, I know. People are fucking retarded.
And lazy. Don't forget lazy.
Okay, well, why don't we just read the bullet points here? The United States Patent and Trademark Office is funded by fees, and the agency gets more fees if it approves an application. Unlimited opportunities to refile rejected applications means sometimes granting a patent is the only way to get rid of a persistent applicant. So they can sit there and refile over and over and over again. And patent examiners are given less time to review patent applications as they gain seniority, leading to less thorough reviews. So that's their bullet points. That's it. They want their fees. They've got people sitting there literally filing repeatedly until the patent office finally gets somebody who accepts it. And patent examiners are not actually looking all that closely at these things.
Well, it's like the Ingress portals. One guy that always says yes and the one guy that always says no. File until you get the guy that says yes.
So, and finally for news stories tonight, bogus patents are a problem, but not nearly as bad as the copyright, because they at least only last 20 years.
Seen how many patents there are for toast? Fucking
probably
retarded.
More. Probably more than I would like. Finally, this is pretty cool. This is from The Verge. Routers like Echo, Knickers, Orbi, and Google Wi-Fi are getting all the hype these days, but replacing your whole network with a bunch of new devices is kind of expensive. Asus has a good solution with its new all-mesh system, which lets you repurpose your existing Asus routers as part of a mesh network. For now, the mesh network support is coming to the Asus RT-A6, AC68U, AC19, or 19000P, RTAC86U53AC5300 Republican Games Rapture AC53000 and plan support for the AC88U and AC3100 later this year. The setup is pretty simple. Once the main router is set up and updated the latest firmware, all the other routers are just going to be mesh nodes. Plug them in near the main router, run a factory reset, and they'll automatically pop up in the ASUS router to add to your mesh. If you still need to place the routers in optimal positions, you can move them. For now, ASUS lacks the tools like those Google offers to help make sure your nodes aren't too far apart, but it's a free update for existing routers. AI mesh seems like a great idea for users. So pretty much what ASUS has done is, because kind of the new trend now for Wi-Fi is these mesh networking nodes. Well, ASUS has said, well, we're just going to put out a firmware for all of our old routers. So you buy one of our new ones that supports meshing and then flash all the old ones, and you can use the old ones as nodes in your mesh.
That's kind of cool.
That's nice. That's good thinking. Because how many, I mean, I've got like 3 old routers in boxes somewhere. Oh, yeah. I don't know that they're ASUS routers, but I'm sure I've got old routers just floating around.
Yeah, who has old ASUS routers? I don't even know if I've ever even seen an ASUS router before.
Oh, I've seen plenty. But
they're definitely not the most popular ones up here in Canada anyway.
No, most people have a Linksys or a Netgear.
Yeah.
But that's a good idea though.
Oh yeah.
It's like, I'd
now,
love to see...
It kind of makes you wonder, could they actually reflash the old ones to work as the base as well? Like,
I don't know about that.
I'm sure they won't for business reasons, but...
Well, there's also the fact that running a mesh network is a lot more CPU intensive, so you might need a newer one to be able to keep up with it.
Yeah.
But it makes me wonder if something like DDWRT could support meshing. Because if it could, then you could grab a whole bunch of random-ass old routers that'll support DDWRT or Tomato and make a mesh. And, you got DDWRT on one and still have Wi-Fi problems? It's probably hardware, because I've got a Netgear, it's one of the Nighthawks. I don't remember the exact model number. I want to say 1900. And I have that same problem. Well, I'll have the Wi-Fi go out every once in a while. It's not nearly as common as it used to be, but I think it might be related to something else I've done on my network, which is kind of goofy, in that I'm using some power line adapters for some infrastructure pieces, and I think that might be part of my problem. But I actually found for the one I've got that there was a... I forgot what it was called, but there's a somebody took the stock router and set the CPU flags to match that hardware, the stock firmware, and recompiled it so stuff is, you know, thread aware and has the right instruction sets, because they kind of used some generic flags for compiling a lot of their packages. So he recompiled from source everything in the stock firmware. And it runs something like, you know, 45% more efficient. And he added some backend packages so you could, you know, put SSH and some things like that on it. And, you know, I'm not doing anything crazy with it, but it just runs better with that modified firmware. So that's something else you might look into, is the official ASUS forums Netgear forums have, you know, areas dedicated to people doing their own firmwares. So, and they don't, Netgear doesn't try to do anything about it, which is kind of nice. So, but I'm not sure on the DDWRT. I haven't ran DDWRT on a router in a long time. I think I've got one up in the attic that's probably still got it on there because we were using it for a LAN party. But that was more for doing subnetting than anything. Not subletting, VLANing. Sorry. Brain. Keep up with shit. Where am I at work? I'm starting to screw up. Anyways. So it is now time, as soon as I can play the damn screen went off, son of a bitch. Suppose I could just have you guys make racist Asian sounds until I get the soundboard back up here.
We love you long time. Be so honey.
I don't remember that being in the jingle. Huh? Yo!
Hadouken! I was going back to the old one where it had a lot of Full Metal Jacket references.
Oh, I've got that one around somewhere. Is it this? Maybe it's this one? Nope, not that one. Okay, I don't know. I'll find it later. Anyways, yeah, well, you know what? Screw you too, Syntax. Anyways, final thing I have for tonight, just one link for Digital Dojo, this neat little program. It's called Onion Share. Don't know how much I would trust it right now with the CPU flaws, though. Onion Share is an open source tool that lets you securely and anonymously share a file with anyone over Tor. Pretty much what this thing does is it spins up a Tor node server. And it's just, you know, shares out the file over HTTP over Tor. And we'll pop you out a .onion link. And anybody who has Tor browser and is connected up to the Onion network can pop that .onion file in and download it as long as you're sharing it. And then, you know, when you're done, of course, you just kill the link and kill the program, right? So it's a nice little concept for just an easy way to get files shared out anonymously, or at least over, maybe not so much anonymously, but over difficult to trace means. So if you're wanting to send somebody a file and maybe not make it so obvious what you're doing, this will do it over Tor. So you can send somebody a .onion link without having to... I suppose if you don't want to reveal who you are, but you still want to send them a file and, you know, it's big enough that a direct connection makes the most sense, this is a way to do it. It's kind of, I mean, it's kind of limited utility beyond the gee-whiz factor, because unless you're going to run it all the time and maintain a series of links, then why wouldn't you just set up a .onion web server? But, I don't know. I thought it was cool at the time.
Yeah, that's neat.
So, but, that's all I've really got tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. That's a lie. We haven't done anything new on the stream in a year. That's just boilerplate in the notepad file for the show notes. I mean, when was the last time we did any real work on the station? I mean, I redid the webpage a while back, but...
Oh, God. It's been a long time.
It's been on autopilot for so long. I don't even know what to do with it at this point. That's an open question. Okay, seriously. You know, get on the IRC or shoot me notes on Reddit. I'm curious what people would like to see us do with the station, because I mean, let's face it, internet radio is all but dead. Everything's over on YouTube or podcasts, which I mean, we put out Pure Decking as a podcast, but I mean, hell, you know, Pure Decking's on half autopilot at this point. I've kind of got it down. You know what I mean? So I just get my usual news sources I go to, read them out, and we make stupid jokes and sex doll jokes, and that's it, right? I mean, come on. So. Anyways, yeah, so I'm curious. I'd love to get some feedback. Either shoot me a note, Morps on Reddit, or in the IRC. I'll leave my usual AFK bot in there so I at least have a shot at seeing what you guys are talking about. Onto Mastodon. Okay, yeah. Cool. So I'd be curious to see what some people would like to see us do with the station with the show, because I don't really know anymore. kind of got in the groove of it, and then it's like, well, shit. Now what? So, of course, Pure Decking every Thursday, unless I decide to do something else, and the Galaxy 15 radio site and subreddit. Madman, closing thoughts.
Anyone wants to buy a car and is willing to pay for shipping, I'll take it to FedEx and fit it in a box.
Is it a DeLorean?
Oh, no, that sucker I'd keep forever. Kind of made by the same company.
Kind of made by the same company. All right, Suave, closing thoughts. I'd call it future news, but you'd get mad.
I'm just going to go turn off all my network connections, shut down all my computers, and hide in a hole.
That will help you out with the two new bugs they found.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the usual joke, right? It's like, take your computer, unhook it, take the power away from everything, fill it, put it in cement, and bury it in the backyard, you might be secure. Maybe.
Yeah.
So, anyways, yeah, that's all I've got, and I guess it's go fire up your 25-year-old machines again. Yeah, I guess. Anybody got a 486 laying around? Wait, fuck, I think I do. No, that one died. That one died. It's processors in the closet, though. I've got a whole box of processors I've been meaning to do something with. So, dial up into FidoNet. Let me break out a Commodore 64. Anyways, that's all I got. Where's the Pac-Man sound?